He is one of South Africa's top labor lawyers. He's a politician and member of parliament. And now you can access Michael Bagrum as he talks law and life on High FM. Join Michael Bagrum at 6 p.m. for Bagrum on Law and Life, 101.9 High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life and law.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us this evening. Every Tuesday evening between 6 and 7, it's Michael Bagrum. I'm happy to hear from you. You give me any ideas who you would like to hear from. If you need to send me a WhatsApp, it's 061-895-1019. 061-895-1019. Or you can email me. It's bags, B-A-G-S, at highfm, oneword.com. And I'm happy to comply. I'm happy to listen to brickbats. If you're unhappy with something I've said, please let me know so we can then correct that. I have a wonderful guest this evening. I'm going to introduce him in a few minutes, but I, like I always do every Tuesday evening, I introduce you to a book that I've been reading, or at least trying to read, because this week I've been trying to delve into an interesting book. It's Marcus Aurelius, who was one of the emperors. The book is called Meditations. It's actually a really worthwhile read. Like I said, I'm struggling a bit because I read 10 pages and I need to have a break and take a walk around because it's quite heavy going. It's called Meditations, but in fact, Marcus Aurelius wrote this book in Greek, not in Latin. And being a Roman emperor, he basically was writing his own thoughts. So the initial title was called To Himself. They're now saying that might have been a better title. Interesting, it was first printed in 1559, and I find it relevant, absolutely relevant today. The emperor was a philosopher, and he had no intention of anyone actually reading this book. It was written for himself. I think it's a worthwhile read. Get hold of a copy. I know Penguin Classics have printed mine. It's called Marcus Aurelius Meditations. So thank you. And I just want to introduce you to our wonderful guest. It's Dr. Petrus Johannes Groenewald, not only an MP, a minister, and he'll take us through some of his CV. But I must just tell you, I went to Israel with Dr. Groenewald. It was a wonderful trip, and I want to talk a little bit about that later on in the show. He was from Fochval in the northwest, and he grew up in a farm near Potchefstroom. Like all of us, he attended compulsory military service at the Equestrian Center. I found it fascinating to read that whilst he was in service, he became the first person in South Africa to ride five horses simultaneously. That's the Roman ride. It fits in very nicely with Marcus Aurelius and what I've been reading about. So well done on that. He became an instructor. He had the full rank of lieutenant, and he's a trained shooting range officer and was a member of the commando unit until 1989, quite recently. He worked at Arms Corps. He has a degree, Juris degree in law from Potchefstroom University, and he did a postgraduate diploma in communication studies. His master's degree was obtained in public management and development at the Northwest University. And then he obtained a doctorate in political studies from the Northwest University. That was in 2013. So he's had an incredibly busy life because that was the time also he was serving in Parliament. And the title of his thesis, which is very interesting, the South African National Electoral System. And in fact, we're busy talking about that now. There are people trying to push the electoral system right now. Maybe he'll be leading those studies in Parliament on that. It'd be interesting to see that. He was elected as a member of Parliament for the Stilfontein constituency. That was in 1989. And he served as the mayor of Stilfontein. Obviously a heavy job, that one. I would never do that, but that's what he did. He served as the chairperson of Portfolio Committee of Defense from 94 to 99. A member of the Constitutional Assembly and Committee on Local Government in compiling the first constitution of the Republic of South Africa. 1999, he was elected as the mayor of Northwest Provincial Legislature, member of the Northwest Provincial Legislature, and where he served until 2001, and then he returned to Parliament thereafter. I'm not going to go through his whole CV. He's done amazing things. He's been on 20 international trips relating to his parliamentary duties and studies, basically been around the world. And he was the founding member, one of the founding members of the Freedom Front in 94, and he also served as the provincial leader of the party in Northwest until 2017. More importantly than anything else, and we're going to talk about it this evening, on the 3rd of July 2024, he was appointed as the Minister for Correctional Services. So, Peter, I hope you don't mind me calling you by your friendly name, Peter. Peter, first of all, introduce yourself and then take us through some of the experiences you've had, which I've tried to outline a little bit in your CV. And I really thank you for being with us this evening. I know you're incredibly busy. I know you're trying to do hundreds of things at once. You're juggling. But over to you. Let us know who the man is.
Thank you, Michael, and good evening to you and all the listeners and viewers. And it's a privilege for me. And you said to introduce myself. I don't think I should add anything that you've just read about me. Can I say that I must say that my political career actually started on a high note when I was the mayor of Stilfontein. And why I say that is that was when you are in control of the political, can I say, management of your municipality. It was completely different what municipalities are these days, of course. And that was a good start. And I think I was privileged, as you have mentioned, that I actually served on all three levels of government, being a mayor, being in the provincial legislature for about 2 years, and for the rest of the years, of course, in the National Assembly. Now, if I can go through that, and yes, after all, I became the minister, which was quite a surprise. We did not expect that. And can I say that my party, the Freedom Front Plus, we've never asked for any executive positions after the 24 election. In fact, we wanted to be, in my case, be the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Police. I've served all my parliamentary years on the Portfolio Committee of Police. And then the president actually phoned me while I was driving from the airport and made the offer. My party had to make a decision because we said we will not be part of that. And as politics is, after consultation and decisions, then I became the minister. If you ask me highlights and can I say the lower levels of politics, I think one of the one of the highlights is actually when I was a leader, and in 2017, I requested the speaker then whether we can have a debate on farm murders because it is in national interest.
I remember that.
Yes, you were there, Michael. You remember. And she first refused it. She refused to have the debate. And then I said to my chief whip that I want to see her personally. We've met, and I convinced her to have that specific debate. So that
Can I put you on hold 1 second? We've got to pay the bills, so we can have an ad break right now. Don't forget where we were.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Thank you. You're back with Michael Bagram and my delightful guest, Dr. Peter Groenewald, an MP with the Freedom Front Plus. Now, Peter, you don't mind me calling you Peter, your first name?
No, please do so, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, Peter, we left off where you were talking about the farm murders debate, which you were the key behind that debate. I remember that debate really like it was yesterday. But it's actually strange how it comes all the way around to today, where that became a topic with the visit to America with with some of our leaders over there, and in fact caused quite a lot of consternation around the world. But tell us a little bit about that debate at the time, because I also remember that the police had cancelled a lot of the commandos at the time on the farms. The farmers were put themselves together to protect themselves, and that seemed to have fallen apart. And I can't remember why, but that seemed to have fallen apart. And then farm murders were at an enormous high at that point.
You're quite correct, Michael. And let me say, as you said, I said that was a highlight because we had the discussion and the debate. And I had the opportunity to actually expose the atrocities of farm murders, to say this is not just normal crime. I mean, if you see the cruelty, how they rape their victims, using drills through women's feet, can I say raping the women in front of their children, I had that opportunity. And of course, all the parties participated, the DA as well, and everybody supported that debate, that farm murders is a very important matter. And as you said, we can go into the history. You're quite right that the commanders played a major role, and it was a sort of an intelligence information gathered, and it was like a blanket over South Africa to see where there were certain movements, and specifically in the rural areas. Now, the commanders were actually finally disbanded in 2007. Now, what happened in the meantime is that the farming communities organized themselves in such a good way that I am on record where I am saying that at present, the safety precautions by the farmers and the community themselves are much better than it was in the case of commandos. You must remember when you're in the commandos, you fall under military discipline and orders and everything. Yeah. And with the new technology, it is just better off. In fact, I know of many farm watchers where they, with the police, they actually, catch the criminals. I know specifically a case where they caught some of these criminals, and one of them was a high-ranking officer in the police services. So on that issue, in a certain sense, because of circumstances, we have a better system.
Thank God for that. Thank God for that. Otherwise, it would be a lot worse.
Yeah. And what I want to say is, if I look at the atrocities, and I really link it up in a certain sense, that was also the privilege I had in my whole political career to, as you said, I visit quite a lot of countries all over the world. And I don't say just because we're on this program. My best visit was with you in Israel. And you took me to the Yad Vashem. I always have the pronouncing, the Holocaust Memorial. Yeah, that's right. You have it. That's right. And when I went through there, I was also thinking of the farm murders. And it is nothing else than genocide that happened, and it is brilliantly exposed in the memorial. You will remember that you said you want to take me now to the other part where the children are, and that. And I said to you, no, because children for me is a very emotional issue. And I knew that I won't be able to control my emotions when we go through there. So that for me was an utmost experience in my whole life and in my political career that I will never forget.
Well, yes, and you know what? I was very honored to be able to take you there. In essence, we also had a short discussion, I don't know if you remember, about the first concentration camps that were ever put up by the British here in South Africa. And I believe some of your forefathers had been through that experience as well. I can't remember the full discussion we had, but You told me a little bit about those concentration camps in South Africa, which I knew very little about. I've subsequently read more about it, and the South African Jewish Board of Deputies has a researcher by the name of David Sachs, who's written quite a lot about that.
Indeed. And I mean, it was a scorched earth policy of the British. And I always say that if you look what happened there, that was also nothing else than an effort of a genocide when it comes to the Afrikaners, where they burned the farms, the farmhouses, also raped the women, the children, the men were on the battlefield. It's a scorched earth. They, destroyed everything, put them in concentration camps, even put pieces of glass in their food, and many children starved to death in these concentration camps. And that's why I say that there is that link. The other link is as well, and that's what makes Israel so unique, specifically when it comes to the Afrikaner, is that the whole issue about self-determination. We use very often Israel as an example of a nation who wants to be free, who wants to have self-determination, and your process, becoming independent in 1948, and in Parliament, we've had numerous motions we've put forward to say, but recognize also the independence of Israel. We know the debate about the Palestinians in Parliament and the ANC, and then we counter them to say, well, you say and you talk about self-determination, but therefore each nation, the Israelis, and we as Afrikaners, we also say that we also have a right of self-determination. And self-determination in South Africa is also in our constitution, section 235, where we have the right of self-determination. So there are quite a lot of similarities when it comes to the Afrikaner nation and the Jewish nation, and specifically Israel.
Let me just take you back to the few days beyond October 7, 2 years ago. You got up in Parliament and made an impassioned speech, really impassioned. You were very emotional when you got up there, and there was a lot of attacking from various political parties on Israel. And despite the negativity and the screaming, you stood up and had the bravery, quite frankly, because it was brave to do it at the time, to say, you people are wrong. The majority of the House is wrong. That Israel didn't start this. Israel has suffered badly. And I sat in the front row in that debate at the time, and actually hearing what the people were saying, it was disgusting, and especially from the EFF, unfortunately, and attacking you personally. You must recall that very first debate you had just after the October 7 massacre that took place in Israel.
You're quite correct there, Michael. And I also say that I believe in what I say. I believe in the truth, and I will never deviate from that. I've been at one stage, maybe the member who's been chased out of Parliament the most of times, of the have the record of the person that's been asked to leave the House of all MPs. Because if I said something, I said it because I believe in that, and that is the truth, and I will never withdraw that. And that was a heated debate, as far as that is concerned.
In fact, we were experiencing, for months thereafter, we were experiencing enormous anti-Semitism from including members of the ANC. And the Speaker was quite happy just to let it run. And then we had that horrible piece of work who was our Minister of Foreign Affairs. I can't even get to say her name. But she gave a speech, and I don't know if you recall this, in one of her speeches, she said there was no attack on October 7, no attack at all, and that it was all AI produced. I don't know if you recall that. At that point, I got up and walked out of the House because either she's mad or she thought we were mad. But it was the most horrific debate I've ever heard in my life. There was a little weasel, a little man, I can't remember what party he was from, the tiny little guy who came out to the most horrible anti-Semitic debates. And it didn't matter what we were talking about. If we were talking about health and safety, he would bring Israel into the debate. I don't know if you recall that. It was a horrible character.
I can recall quite clearly, Michael. And that is one of my lowest levels which I experienced in Parliament. You know, I always say that as politicians, we have different views. But I said it many times, and you will remember in many speeches, I said what South Africa needs is respect. We must respect each other. Now, the incident you referred to that specific member of parliament, is proof that there's no respect, not even for history. And I always say, you cannot change history. In a state of denial, which I think is deliberately on the debate, it's totally unacceptable to be called an honourable member of parliament, because there's nothing honourable in that words or in the action of that specific member of parliament in that debate. And where I come, on different platforms up to the highest level, I usually just ask one thing. Specifically, you look at the situation now. I always ask, but why does the Palestinians don't return the hostages? It's as simple as that. I mean, they still have some hostages, but why don't they want to return them? And then they can't answer. I can't mention the platforms, but up to the highest level, I've said, you must have a balanced view. We have differences. It's no secret. I side with Israel, because I believed in the truth. I mean, the every nation has the right of self-determination, and with that, the right of self-defense. And that's exactly what is happening in the conflict when it comes to Palestine. And I want to reiterate it again. Why don't the Palestinians just return the hostages that's still left?
Well, they want to continue the war, that's why. But the bottom line is, one of your colleagues, and I think it was MP Mulder, had said in Parliament that everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but they're not entitled to their own truth. That truth is irrefutable, and they're entitled to opinion, but not their own truth. I thought it was a very clever thing to say. And I think he was saying that afterwards, after you had spoken as part of the ongoing debate, he went and stood that up to actually say that that's what you're telling us. You're telling us the truth. You're not giving us an opinion. You're telling us what's actually happening. Did you find a trip like that useful to you, other than Yad Vashem, of course, which I recall you became very emotional. At one point you had to sit down in the passage on a bench, and I had to wait for you because you just couldn't carry on walking after what you had seen. So it's an emotional topic for you. Do you feel at the end of the day that you gained anything other than that in your trip to Israel? Could you see that there was a normal society, that there was no apartheid or that sort of thing? That's what we keep hearing. That now, you obviously who have been through Parliament for many years, you would recognize apartheid, you would recognize discrimination. Did you see any of that in Israel at the time?
No, not at all, Michael. And I mean, I know that there are some of the members, and specifically the ANC, they have to criticize if people go and visit Israel. So for me, it is a sort of a sign that they are afraid of the truth, because then they will see what they are saying is not true. I mean, I think it's ridiculous to compare it with apartheid pre-1994. And I mean, you refer to the memorial, but of course, we had many visits. We traveled around the country. And what struck me as well is the technology, the knowledge, the contributions of the Jewish people when it comes to the economy, development, and all that sort of things. But I must say, there was one specific thing that caught my attention, and that is that we was also said that the Jewish people are always proud for the fact that they are Jews. And I would say why that is important to me. I always say there are two ways how you can destroy a nation. The first one is by means of war. And even if I take it, and it's a comparison again, if you look at Israel and you look at the Afrikaners, the mighty British Empire of that time couldn't destroy the Afrikaner people. The world cannot destroy Israel. So in terms of a war, they will not succeed. But the other way to destroy a nation, if you can withdraw his pride to be what he or she is. And I'm really worried when it comes to the Afrikaners. Some of them now are ashamed to be called an Afrikaner. For me, those are only red lights. And that's what I appreciate and what I saw on our visit to Israel. Jews, doesn't matter where they are very proud to be known and say that I am Jew, a Jew. And I mean, even if you look at your previous wars, was it the 6 or 7 day war?
6 day war.
Six day war. The Jewish people flew in from all over the world to come and take hands with that patriotism. And I want to be very honest as far as that is concerned. That is, can I say, the secret weapon of Israel, the proud of his people and defending themselves.
Thank you. We can jump off the platform now and give them an ad break and then come back on in 1 minute.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Thank you. You're back with me, Michael Bagrame, our normal Tuesday evening from 6 to 7. I really appreciate it. If you want to contact me, you've got to contact the station. You've got all my details. Let me know which other guests you'd like to hear. We're with a fantastic guest, Dr. Pieter Groenewald, minister in the South African government currently. He's been taking us through some of his history, some of his accomplishments, and, of course, the trip that we went off to Israel and the emotional experience he had at Yad Vashem, and just talking to people. We visited many places and tried to traverse the country as much as we could in the short period of time that we had there. But I want to move on a little bit, and I want to talk a little bit about what's happened with the current government at the moment where we are in South Africa under the government of national unity. And I'm sure our guest, Pieter Groenewald, he's got a lot to say about that, and I'd like to hear from him, from the Freedom Front Plus point of view and his personal point of view, and whether he thinks it's working. We're going through quite a torrid time at the moment. We had a long session today in Parliament, and tomorrow it looks like it's going to be a good at least 12 hours worth of discussion. So, Pieter, just before you take us into your confidence as you were, how you enjoying your ministry, but take us what your thoughts are about the GNU.
Michael, firstly, as I said in the beginning, that we must remember that the Freedom Front Plus said that we will not be part of any sort of coalition where the ANC, the EFF, and the MK party would be part of. Correct. And we said we will not go with the ANC. But then after the election results, I said there was an offer to us. And then my party made a decision. And the reason for the decision to say, yes, let's accept the position of Minister for Correctional Services is that you now have a platform. You are sitting on the highest level of government where you can put your views to the front. And that's why we accepted it. And I think that is the whole, can I say, core of the government of national unity. You can call it the GNU, you can call it a certain special type of coalition, it doesn't matter, we are there.
We can call it a Wildebeest.
Yeah, we can call it that. As long as we don't call it the buffalo. So,
don't go there.
Now, the fact of the matter is that I must say that in cabinet, there are not emotional speeches and that sort of thing. It's rational. It is with respect. I've mentioned that respect for me is very important. And I can say to the people that, yes, the discussions are taking place with great respect, with our differences. And I know a lot of people say, but is it successful? Well, I say at the moment it is, because the reason I say that is, if we were not in a government of national unity, let's take the budget. You referred that we're going to have debates tomorrow on the budget, the division of revenue. Then we would have not been here. Then we would have had to deal with a budget with a 2% increase in the VAT rate. So that in itself is a positive step of one of the results of the GNU. But I go even further. You know, people and the electorate thought that it is actually impossible to beat the ANC at the polling stations or in an election. We can remember what Zuma said at one stage. He said that the ANC will rule until Jesus comes.
Yeah.
And, well, the voters, the electorate decided otherwise. And the mere fact that the ANC actually decreased to only a 40% support is a huge, can I say, made a huge difference in the future for South Africa, where we call ourselves a constitutional democracy.
They received a snot clap.
That's good, right? Yeah, that's right. You can call it that. That's the Afrikaans word for that.
For what happened
descriptive,
to them.
Quite descriptive.
Yeah.
And that, the electorate must not forget about that. There is change. And the moment you start with a change, then there will be progress for the future. I predict that the ANC will, I can't see that they will recover to become a one-party government again, go back to 50%. Remember, they had about 58% majority before the 24 election. And to decrease from a 58% majority to a 40% minority, you will never survive in politics to go back to get more than 50%. And that is also in the hands of our electorate. And we must thank them because they made the decision. And we must keep it up. And yes, there are changes. I can see it in cabinet. Of course, I'm not allowed to speak what happens in cabinet. But there are many policy changings coming through very slowly. And I must also say, that was in the public domain. If I can go back to the budget, and let's go back to February when we had the budget speech, the usual process was that the Wednesday morning, there was a cabinet meeting. That was now before the Government of National Unity. The Minister of Finance actually told cabinet what he's going to say, and that's that. It was one party, and what the minister said will be the speech.
It's a done deal,
Yeah, but this year they had to postpone. It was enormous impact. And can I say what was interesting to me is that there were even ministers of the ANC who objected. Specifically, and it was about the 2% increase in VAT. And I could experience that in the ANC itself, it was the first time that ministers had, the confidence to come forward and have arguments against what actually the decision was from the Minister of Finance. And that's also a good sign. And of course, I always say that we must remember, and I said it before in the election, we are all going through a learning curve when it comes to coalitions. Firstly, a can I say, a learning curve for the electorate and also a learning curve for political party leaders. For the electorate, they're not used to this because they sometimes ask me, but why are you there? Because then I can vote for any other party as well. I said, no, you must bring your principles, your political principles, and you must strengthen your political party to bring those principles in the government of national unity. So it's a learning curve. For political party leaders, I said that now for the first time, you cannot as a party just say that there's only one interest and that is what is in the best interest of my political party. That's still part of the problem with the ANC. Yeah. They did everything of what is in the best interest of the ANC. Now, political party leaders have to ask themselves of what is in the best interest of the electorate. So these are positive things, and we must further explore it. And of course, there are some negativities. And one of the big problems we have and what happened, and people must not forget that, we had some tours to Germany as well in terms of coalition governments and that sort of things. And all over the world, normally it can take even up to 6 months before a coalition government can be installed. Oh, can I say? Yes.
Cobbled together.
Come together, yeah.
Yeah.
In South Africa last year, we don't have that privilege. In fact, the Constitution determines that within 14 days after the results of an election has been announced, a government must be formed.
Can I stop you there? Another ad break. We've got to pay the bills.
Catch the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kazilski and Faggy Stern every Wednesdays at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. only on 101.9 High FM. High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Thank you. You're back with Michael Bagram and my wonderful guest, Dr. Groenewald, MP, a minister in our government of correctional services, taking us through his past, taking us through what he believes about the GNU or the Wildebeest, I call it. And he has been incredibly interesting. He's talking his heart. He's spoken to us about his trip to Israel and also where we're standing now about some of the successes that he's feeling. Now, Dr. Groenewald, I sit on the Labour portfolio, Department of Employment and Labour, and I've sat on that portfolio now for 11 years. I've never seen it so positive. And some of the ideas that I've been talking about for those 11 years, like trying to ease up the regulations for small business, trying to ease up regulations to be able to employ people. For the first time, I'm actually getting some positivity. For the first time, we're going to have legislation that's going to come before the House, hopefully within the next 6 months, to try and make it easier for small businesses to ensure that we can employ people. Now, you've sat on numerous portfolio committees. You obviously sit now on the Correctional Services portfolio. Are you finding it there, right at the base? That's the engine room of Parliament, or the portfolio committees. Are you finding some positivity coming out of there?
No doubt, Michael. And as you've mentioned, and the reason, therefore, is again, we're going back to the results of the election. And we must thank the voters for that, because we must remember the portfolio committees before the last election. The ANC had the majority in each and every portfolio committee.
And the chairperson,
that if there is a, he has or she has a final decision for that matter. But then I want to say that now it is not that there's a single party who can have a majority in a portfolio committee. And we know reports, legislation, specifically when it comes to legislation and regulations in some the acts, that it must be approved, firstly, with the portfolio committee. And now the ANC don't have that sole majority. And therefore, the people of South Africa must understand that is also one of the positive issues when it comes to the government of national unity, although there it is not necessarily only the government of national unity, because the portfolio committee, and that's also rules, is also proportionally, the composition is proportionally in terms of the political parties. And therefore, there will be change, and your party, the DA, is playing a strong and very major role in those changes. And that's where we say from our side, we have to take hands and see that we bring the change. Because, I mean, people are actually forget how it was before last year's election. And correct. Unfortunately, there are some people who think it's still the same, but it is not the same. There are huge changes to the benefit, and I say it again, to the benefit of the people of South Africa, all the people of South Africa, not only for a specific political party. I mean, the major issue in South Africa is unemployment. There's no doubt about it. If we're not going to have economic growth, then I think that everybody will agree, then we're not going to survive. We must create jobs. And now we have strong voices. And I go back as what I said in terms of the 2% increase of VAT. There are strong voices now in cabinet, I can say that, that say, listen, we must not only talk about how we're going to ensure how the economy is going to grow, we must ensure that it happens in practice. We must start practice what we preach.
Absolutely. Now, what I did want to say to you is we left Israel at the time, I think it was a day earlier than the rest of the group. So you had to get to South Africa. I had to get back to run a court case. So I was with you. We sat together on the airplane back. And I asked you why you were coming back to South Africa a day earlier. And it was to experience and join the Day of the Vow. Do you recall that discussion? Well, I tell you, that made a lot of sense to me. I knew then, if I didn't know before, I knew then that I was talking to a man of principle. Talking to a man who stays by his word, stays by his belief. People often tell me politics is a game of expediency, but you don't see it that way. You see it as a game of knowledge, belief, and truth. And the difference is we have most of the people, I would go so far as to say that, sitting in Parliament, saying it is a game of expediency. What's best for us or what's best for our party, not what's best for South Africa. So I actually want to thank you enormously because we're now coming to the end of our show. I could have sat for at least another hour chatting to you, and I apologize because I've left out a lot of the questions that I wanted to ask. I mean, one thing I wanted to speak to you about, I see that you had an interest in karate, and I wanted to try and unpack that a bit. I won't say anything rude to you, don't worry, and you won't have to react. But the bottom line is I want to thank you enormously for taking the time out. I want to thank you for supporting the Jewish people. Wherever you are, you speak up, you say what is the truth, and you stand by it, no matter how many brickbats are thrown at you. So I appreciate it. I know that our listeners will appreciate listening to this. I'll try and get a podcast to you so you can show your family as well. But you've done exceptionally well in your career. You've grown from strength to strength. So I want to thank you, and I really appreciate everything that you've done. And thank you for spending the time with me this evening.
Thank you, Michael. And the privilege is mine. Thank you for the opportunity. And people say that I'm too honest in politics, but I think South Africa needs honesty even in the highest levels of our government and in parliament. That's what we need to survive also in South Africa.
Now, you need to be rooted to your country and to the ground and to your beliefs. So thank you. Thanks once again. And I hand back to the management of High FM. Thank you.